This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have on the robe of the penitent today. Anyway, that's what I call it. In the religion of my upbringing, I believe that would ordinarily be white, but this one's black. So I wore this because I figured practice would be very difficult today, and sure enough, by that I mean that, as often comes to my mind, Suzuki Kiroshi, of course, said, it's not sitting cross-legged that isn't hard, or sitting in a chair, or just sitting still. That's not what's hard. But he said, as you know, keeping the mind pure, that's hard. And of course, as with everything we say, there's already something a little funny about that. And of course, he knew that. You don't, strictly speaking, keep the mind pure. There isn't any way to do that. And yet, if we don't make some effort, most of us, we don't have an adequate sense of our life. And if we don't have an adequate sense of our life, we somehow start to wobble. So to help us, our teachers wind up saying slightly weird things like, well, it's hard to keep the mind pure. And then usually, if we have even just a little experience of practice, we kind of recognize that and say, oh yeah, I guess that's right, sort of. And then usually, as soon as we hear that, we kind of attach to it. And we think, oh, well, that must mean such and such. Like, well, when I sit, you know, if I'm sitting cross-legged or something, or sitting in the zendo, I should be free of thoughts. Or suppress all disturbances. Or annihilate distractions, or something like that. Usually some formula comes to mind. And then each encounter with formal practice, we try to apply the formula. And sometimes that works for quite a while, and then we encounter something like a sesshin, and then somewhere around 8:45 a.m., day two, the formula explodes in our face. And horror ensues. You realize, oh, no, no, that wasn't it. Oh, dear, oh, dear. And then eventually the horror winds down, and then sometimes you just land in a rather inadvertently clear space for a while when you are formulaless. And then usually you devise another formula for a while. And then it usually takes a while for one to realize that there's something about the formulalessness which is of itself quite compelling, and that you can't contrive. And that has the kind of the intimate resonance of life itself. And that this is really what is meant by Zazen, or practice. And then being human, of course, then we think, that's it, formulalessness. Like, now I know, formulalessness. And then you try to get a handle on formulalessness. And then, of course, that trips us up. But then, eventually, that resonance, that intimate resonance itself will remind us that there isn't even such a thing as formulalessness either. And fortunately, there are our teachers around who will, you know, help us out, or try to, with varying degrees of skill or lack thereof, and with a little luck, you know, there are communities of practitioners who will, you know, help the so-called teachers. Of course, teachers and communities do not exist independently of one another. You don't get the one without the other, unless there's something very wrong. So today, you know, I don't want to go into, you know, too much. I don't want to talk about my own process too much, for fear of having a Dharma talk where it's like too much about me. Because periodically, you know, you hear people grousing about Dharma talks. Well, so-and-so gave a Dharma talk and it was all about him or her or something, which is like, ooh, that doesn't sound right. But anyway, it was a kind of tough practice this morning, and I've been having some tight times in the community over the past couple of days, and this person here sitting on this sofa was having one of those times where accusations were flying thick and fast, and one was feeling ill-used and wrongly accused. And as you know, when the being is beset like that, a particularly dense sense of self comes up, like kind of like taffy. And it's very, very sticky. And it's very hard to kind of manipulate touch it, you know, your hands get stuck. And the process gets very slow and hard to move. And the samskaras, that is the emotional productions, start to happen very hard upon the heels of one another. And this morning I noticed, well, I didn't have much company at breakfast, just poor Jim Shalcom was sitting there, and I'm sitting there glaring at my tea, you know. I couldn't say anything, you know, to anybody. And I was actually trembling with anger. I was so furious. And my body was shaking, you know, not at Jim, but at circumstances that were happening. I thought, whoa, this is really intense to be that angry at stuff that was happening. And then someone from, actually this person sitting in front of me, who was kind of outside, as we say, a guest from outside creation, showed up, which was kind of a little distracting, and that was a little helpful, because it kind of poked a hole in what was happening. But I was really shocked that I could feel that intensely furious, and to be in the midst of this samskaric unfolding. And then to also go and sit in the zendo in the midst of that was very, very powerful. And to see, yes, it is hard to, quote, keep the mind pure. And to fall over and over again into these same samskaric productions is to see the quality of sentient being and Buddha unfolding over and over and over again. It's a fascinating and humbling lesson. And of course, keeping the mind pure, in a sense, is nothing special. By that, and I don't think in that particular talk, I don't think maybe Sukarishi didn't say, but he meant, of course, well, you don't lean ahead or behind. You don't go future or past or right or left or positive or negative or wrong or right or any of those things. You don't do any of that stuff. That's all that means. And in the face of all of these samskaric currents that are tugging and pulling in all of those directions, you simply be as you are. And all of those tuggings don't actually take you anywhere. I know it doesn't look that way, but in fact, they don't. Right? This is the powerful truth that is revealed in his practice. And it is so hard to talk about, and in a way, so counterintuitive, that those clever ancient China men and China women devised a whole totally weird language to talk about it. And in our study hour, we're, you know, swimming in that language for, you know, an hour a week, which is about all we can stand. And these antic sayings and doings, you know, are encodings of these very, very simple and basic body-mind truths spun into poetry. That's all they are. So recently we had the famous, I guess not that long famous, but anyway, the teacher Lu Tzu, who you would see a monk, you know, who's already, you know, a monk is, as we said during study hour, a monk is already a problem, somebody who's dressed weird. It's like, why are you dressed weird? You know, why have you put on strange Confucian robes and left the world? That's already a problem. So He would see somebody dressed like that coming, and he would sit down and face the wall. That's all he'd do. Right? This is already a little short poem about keeping the mind pure. That's all it is. And then Nanchuan heard about this and thought, that poem's too short. That poem about keeping the mind pure is too short. I got a little longer one. I say, realize before the empty eon. Oh, is that better? Well, it's a little longer. Or, understand before the appearance of Buddhas in the world. Well, that's another little longer poem. Those are also about keeping the mind pure. About steering the mind away from past, future, right, wrong, forward, back, up, down. Any of that. Letting the mind rest again in its own simple nature. Exactly the place where all of these samskaras are arising. Exactly the place that is trembling in fury. Now, you may say, and I say, that's pretty bad, you know. Priest of Buddha, trembling in fury, that's pretty bad. It's like, yes, I know that. And thus I wear the robe of the penitent and confess and repent to all of you. I kind of felt like, no, I should not be trembling in fury, but if I am, maybe I should say so. You know, well, actually, I'm not anymore, but I was, and so I want to confess that. And I kind of wish that I hadn't been. And maybe I can figure out how to make some effort not to do that in the future, but I think I better not promise that I'll never do that again, because I think that would be dumb. But I will renew my pure precept vows to do no evil, to undertake all good, and to embrace and sustain all beings. I will certainly do that. But as you know, that is not done in isolation. That is done with others. And if others, if I can't bring others with me, that's much, much harder. So I hope I will be able to bring all of you with me, and maybe some others who are not present also with me somehow. And together, this great effort of keeping the mind pure will continue to reveal itself in all of its daunting simplicity. I should say this, but maybe I should. I don't know. So among the various things that were hurled at my little bald head, somebody said that my people skills were really shitty. And I thought, I didn't know that. I thought they were kind of okay. So if they're not okay, I need to know that. And I hope people will help me work on them, because I didn't know they were shitty. But if like people won't tell me that they're shitty or how they are, I can't work on them or develop them. So I need help with these things. Okay? And if people aren't around to help me with them, then I will descend into pond scum and stay there. This is why Sangha is so critical. please, I need help. And I will appear in the world as a penitent as often as I think it's necessary, and I will confess and repent as often as the occasion warrants, and more often if others say it's warranted. But I absolutely depend on that conversation to be ongoing. And I depend on this great pure effort being made with you, with all of you, day after day after day. And this is how the meaning of realizing before the empty eon actually takes on skin, flesh, bones, and marrow, rather than just being some weird thing out of a book. This is how it comes alive for us. In this room now. So yeah, practice is pretty hard sometimes. And anyway, part of my practice is to sit still for criticism. I will do that, but I kind of need my critics to sit still with me. So that's okay, you know. If you have some criticism, I will sit still with you.